And now on Tucson Business Radio, let's find out how to be healthy, wealthy, and wise with your host, Karen Fisher.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise radio show broadcasting live from the Stewart Title Studio on Broadway in Tucson. I have three amazing guests. My name is Karen Fisher. I am a mortgage loan originator with Summit Funding. And the reality is, as a loan originator, I see everything. In fact, I ask the questions that your mother told you you weren't ever allowed to ask. And because of that, in my number of years in the business, I know that all kinds of people need all kinds of help, and I've decided to do this radio show. This is an ongoing monthly show and talking about three topics: being healthy, wealthy, and wise, because when you think about it, that's what really everybody needs in their lives. So I have three amazing guests on the show today. Our first guest, we've got Carolyn Miner. I want to let you know I've known Carolyn through a number of years. We actually met through an organization that specializes in helping real estate agents as well as loan officers called By Referral Only. And it was a long, long time ago. But interestingly, behind the scenes, as far as what she's done, she has had 20 years of professional dance training. She has performed internationally. She actually, like, if you were to, like, do the Google search under Carolyn Miner and stuff like that, like, she's danced all over the world, all over Europe, and amazing. She's also been certified through a very rigorous certification program with the National Yoga Certification, and I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce, so I'll ask her a little bit later how to pronounce the type of certification she has with yoga. She teaches yoga and meditation both privately and in a class setting. And then last but not least, by any means, she has lived, worked, and played in Arizona since 1986. She had an outrageously successful career in the performing arts and has relocated to Tucson. And she fell in love with real estate, became a partner in a renovation company. And this is crazy if you think about it. Managed, remodeled, and helped to construct over 400 units. It's just crazy. And so she's been in real estate as a realtor since 2005. Came through she caused the crash, but we won't blame her completely, right? Has a lot of experience with that. So we'll talk. So welcome, Carolyn. Just say hello, and then I'm going to introduce our other guests.
Hello, and thank you so much for having me on the program today.
We are going to have so much fun. My other two guests, I've got Diane Halpin and Carrie Mansour. They are actually a dynamic duo, I will say. But behind the scenes, Diane was this is an unbelievable story. First of all, you can't see her yet, but you'll see her as far as the photo. She's absolutely beautiful. She was an undercover cop in San Diego for the San Diego Police Department. And to make a long story short, she developed a very unique perspective of life behind the scenes. She did a lot of work. I mean, some of the bad guys and things like that. You worked vice. You did undercover work, which, I mean, that to me, I just think is a very, very scary because, you know, nobody, you didn't have your gun. You didn't have any of the things that you would normally think as as an officer you'd be able to have to protect you. And she took years of experience along with the Master's in Human Resources Management and certification as an ultimate game of life coach to pioneer and create your own company called Spa Life, which Spa Life stands for Seek Power Always. I just love that acronym. And is featured in a podcast called Live Your Spa Life. And then Carrie Mansour is the consummate first responder. He has served in our armed forces. Thank you very much, Carrie, for serving as a U.S. Navy submarine service veteran. And then he's got all of the boxes checked for being a first responder. He was a former firefighter, EMT, police sergeant, and your entire life has basically been spent in public life. He's also an international speaker, author, and sought-after communication mastery speaker. So first of all, welcome, Diane.
Thanks, Karen, for having me. This is going to be so fun.
We are having fun. And thank you again, Carrie.
Thank you very much for having us here.
So much. So we're going to start. We're going to do things a little bit in reverse. Instead of ladies first, we're going to have gentlemen first. So, Carrie, I would love for you, please share with our listeners your background and your story is amazing. So just take it away.
Well, thank you. You know, I been very blessed in my life. I left home at 17 years old. Just a month after my 17th birthday, I joined the Navy, spending on submarines. I've traveled the world and eventually settling in San Diego. And along the way, I served on two different fire departments, a couple different ambulances, spent time as an emergency room technician, and then ultimately fell in love with law enforcement. And just last Friday, retired after 30 years of service.
That's unbelievable. 30 years of service. And that's how's that when you're only 22 years old? You know, there you go. But yeah, no, 30 years of service.
I wish I was only 22. If I knew now what I, or if I knew then what I know now, it'd be great. But we don't have that. And it's just one of the reasons I love your show, The Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, is we're able to share. I call myself the Robin Hood of public safety. I steal wisdom from the people that have it and share it with the people that need it to make their lives better.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Tell me a little bit more. Just a little bit more about your background. Yes, as far as sub, but you've got an amazing, compelling story of why you've done what you've done and how you nurture and take care of the people that are around you, whether it is the other officers, and then also how you help to protect and defend some of our nation's most vulnerable, and some of the right ways that it was done, and some of the things that you said, okay, I need to make a change. So tell me a little more. Tell me, I know the story, but our listeners need to hear it from you.
Sure. Thank you. So it was 1992, and I've been on the department, San Diego Police Department, for about 3 years. I had about 4 years law enforcement experience at that time, and my supervisor stopped me while I was walking through the headquarters of the San Diego Police Department, and he asked me a very interesting question, and I knew immediately where the conversation was going to be going when he asked me, how many citizen complaints do you think that the average Central Division police officer receives in a year? And I laughed at first, and I said, I didn't even know they tracked that sort of thing. He says, well, we do. And he told me, and ultimately the answer was 0.33 per year, so one every 3 years. Well, I had received 7 in 6 months.
Oh, so you're a star performer.
I was an overachiever even back then. And of course, my immediate defense was, well, wait a second. None of those have been founded. I've been cleared on all of those. He said, that's not the point. The point is you're getting them. And even if I'm clearing you, or IA is clearing you on the complaints.
IA stands for Internal Affairs.
Yeah,
as
thank
far
you.
As
Sorry,
the lingo. Yeah,
throwing
that's
out those
okay.
law enforcement acronyms. Yeah. Even though Internal Affairs or my supervisor had cleared me on the complaints, there was still that concern of, hey, if where there's smoke, there's fire. So ultimately what he did is he said, hey, you can work in a different part of the city. But he pulled me off my beat.
But tell us what your beat was, because it's something that is... Yeah, some people would say, oh, well, they deserved it, period, the end.
Yeah, and it's kind of the way I looked at it. So we had a very interesting dynamic in Balboa Park at the time, which was my beat. We had a lot of very young boys that were coming up from Tijuana. We're talking 10, 12, 14-year-old boys. And somehow a dynamic had been created where pedophiles were preying on them in Balboa Park. And there was one particular area of the park where the kids came and where the pedophiles came, and they matched up, and the kids were making money. So the kids were very happy. You know, they're coming from very poor neighborhoods. They're providing for their families. And the pedophiles were very happy as well. And what I did was I took that on as a mission to solve that problem. And I had a lot of passion and commitment towards solving that issue. And what I did was when I communicated with the pedophiles, they didn't like being called on the carpet about what they were doing. And quite frankly, anybody who even looked at the kids, I found a reason to stop. And all of my stops were legally based. Everything I did was legal, moral, and ethical. But the way I communicated was not effective. And it generated complaints. Now, I would be cleared because everything I did was legal, moral, and ethical. And yet, you can still be in that role and still not communicate effectively with people. So when I got moved to a different area of the city, I realized that if Carrie was indeed the problem, if my communication with people was the problem, then the city didn't fix the problem. They just moved it. And I wanted to go back to working on that project because it meant a lot to me, and I knew I was having impact. I knew I was putting in people in jail that needed to be in jail. I knew I was protecting children that needed to be protected. And so to be able to continue that work, I needed to fix myself. So I dove into conflict resolution, communication skills, and ultimately that led to me a few years after that, well, 4 months after that, I got back on my beat. I got back to taking care of that problem. But I did it with a different approach, and I did it with an approach that did not generate complaints. So I was still able to do everything that was right and communicate better. So then I took that information and developed ultimately the diversity and community relations college course for people getting their criminal justice degree, taught that, created the textbook, created the handouts, everything, taught that course after writing the curriculum for it. And I've spent the last 30 years refining and honing those skills, both as a trainer and as a law enforcement officer. So now what I do is I take this information, I help business owners and companies increase their sales up to 300% because they're now able to develop rapport with their clients. They're able to communicate effectively with their clients and let them know what awesome things they can do for their clients' lives.
I just find that a whole all of it fascinating. And if you think about sales, and people ask me, what do you do? I mean, yes, my official title is loan officer, but the reality is I am a professional salesperson. I analyze people's needs on a personal basis. I analyze people's needs and then match them up with the correct resources, whether it is money from a mortgage or through the radio show, those resources and things like that. And I'm thinking, yes, we've met and gotten to know each other for over the past couple of days with some trainings that we've done. I find it fascinating. I'm like, oh my gosh, he's got like the most difficult sales job ever, which is to convince a criminal to be compliant. It's pretty wild.
And that's what I used to joke about. I never thought of myself as a salesman at first. And then I realized, well, I am the consummate salesman as a law enforcement officer because I'm selling people into handcuffs without resistance. I'm selling people into voluntary compliance because if I can get them to say yes on their own, then we don't have a use of force situation. And so one of the things that Diane and I are doing is we've been working on creating curriculum to share an amazing communication system with law enforcement, with public safety, fire, and EMS also, because I still have a true love for those occupations and I want to be able to help them communicate in situations when emotions are high and people tend to make poor decisions during those times. So if I can share with law enforcement, with fire, with EMS, the ability to connect, develop rapport, truly communicate with somebody, we can reduce the violence in law enforcement. We can reduce the use of force by law enforcement officers because now they're able to get that voluntary compliance.
I just find it amazing and wonderful, and I wish my grandfather were still alive. Many of the listeners on the show know that my grandfather was a police officer in Detroit during Prohibition and the Depression. And we would have, before he passed away, we had these amazing conversations about what it was like during that time frame and how, so think of it, this, they didn't have radios. I mean, telephones just kind of got invented. And they were on the beats, they were on the streets. And he used to say that one of the issues within what he would share with me, his opinion is that there was an increase in crime when you took officers out of the communities and put them in cars. He says, because when you were walking, Detroit was rough in the 20s and 30s with the Purple Gang. It was crazy. Made the history books, right? But he would say, if you were there, it would be some of the roughest communities. But people, they got to know him and you knew what was going on and you were able to protect people. So, okay. Well, thank you, Carrie. We'll talk more about what you're doing now because it's very, very exciting. Diane, your story. Oh my gosh. Okay. So first of all, you were in a non-traditional, let's face it, most women, most of the police forces are not comprised of women. Okay. So, but you became an officer in 90.
Right, in 91.
91, the year our daughter was born, so yes.
Right.
So your story is amazing.
Right. Yeah, definitely it was a non-traditional route. I didn't grow up saying, I want to be a police officer growing up. I was actually the oldest of three children, and it was my dad who wanted me to succeed that had said that, okay, you're going into college, the first of the children go into college. Are you going to be a doctor or an attorney? As if those were my only choices. right? And was interesting as I'm not really interested in medical. Law seems interesting. I could maybe be an attorney. So I got my degree in criminal justice, and my senior year of college, I started working for an attorney, and I started doing all the research, all the internal type work, and I'm like, I cannot do this for the rest of my life. I found it so boring, right? And we'll talk a little bit more about that later, about why I found that so boring, about knowing personalities and really knowing how people communicate and how they step into careers of that nature. And so, here I am, my senior year, and what am I going to do with this degree? And I had several of the guys that were graduating along with me were going into the police department and said, why don't you come on a ride along and just come check it out? So I was curious. I was a good student. I knew that I could do the legal aspect of it. I had never held a gun before in my hand. I never shot before. I was 12 years Catholic school, had no idea what was happening on the street. So talk about going blindly into a profession. I really had no idea what I was getting into. Although I was curious and loved the idea of going into homes and finding out what's going on in the neighborhood. And I was nosy enough to want to know what was happening and what people were doing and why they were doing things. And so I found it intriguing. And so I thought, well, what the heck, I'll take, the test to go in and see what happens. Well, at the time they were looking to increase women on the department. And by the time I took the test and got on the street was 3 months.
Oh,
so it was a very quick turnaround,
fast.
Very fast of being accepted and being in the academy.
Yeah.
And, we had part of the process at the time where you would have classroom time and then you would be on the street as well. And then at the time there was a very big case going on, the Green River serial killer who was killing prostitutes. And what was happening with that was, that's how I got involved in undercover prostitution, was we were looking for a serial killer. And not only that particular one, but there were a lot of copycats that were happening at the time as well.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I had two young daughters at the time as well and, was married, and it was just, a very rude awakening. There was a lot of, Carrie was actually on the vice team that was in charge of watching me during the time, and we knew each other and worked around each other. But it was very much an on-the-job training of just even learning some of the lingo and some of the things that were happening of the greater purpose of what that's about. And so for me, a lot of it is, the communication is such a huge aspect of what we talk about and what we do in a law enforcement role, because a lot of people don't understand, particularly when we talk about things like vice, because they go like, well, who cares who's sleeping with who and why are you, focusing on that? And, there's always a deeper reason. We're looking at that and focusing on those kind of things because of the element it creates, of how it affects communities, of how, the people that we're looking at, it's not always a stranger jumping out of, a dark alley. It's somebody, one person can affect a whole community. And so really focusing on the ones that are causing the most damage can really have an impact. And so we really look at it from that level. So, all of that was like the heavier aspect of the work, mm-hmm. Because I worked patrol as well as undercover. And one of the assignments I've shared with you before that I would do is we got to do a lot of things in neighborhoods. And one of the undercover assignments I had was riding mountain bikes in neighborhoods. And we were looking for 10851s, which were stolen vehicles because they were being taken out of the neighborhoods and driven down to Mexico. Us working out of San Diego, that was, a quick route for people to do. And so in training for that assignment, I was actually riding downhill, I'll never forget the name, on Candy Rose Way, and it hit a pothole. And I went over the top of my handlebars of my bike, and it reached out my hand, hit the ground, and I rolled onto my back. I knew something was drastically shifted, changed. And I had looked over at my hand, and for those of you who may know what compound fractures are, that is the bone coming out. I had shattered all of the bones in my right hand. And my fingers were actually bent back towards my elbow.
Oh my God.
And thank God for adrenaline that gets us through so many things that we don't really realize the extent of things and how those happen at the time. But I was rushed to the emergency room, and the on-call emergency doc had told me that, if we do not snap this hand back right away, you'll lose the hand. So the last thing I remember was the snap back and crack, and I passed out. And so one of the things that when I woke up, I noticed that there was a big contraption on my arm, and it was a external fixator that had 6 rods that went through my hand to stabilize
it. Everybody given the
right?
church. Yeah.
Yeah. So we never know the moments and the things that are going to shift our life forever. You know, I thought this was going to be, you know, a career for
You're
me.
Gonna be,
you know, I'm 10 years into my career. I've got young kids. I've got, you know, mortgage. I mean, all these things that run through your head and what's happening. So, you know, I had to move back in with my parents, right? Because we don't think about our dominant hand that we use. I was right-handed. I used it for everything. So I had to relearn everything using my left hand, anywhere from getting myself dressed to combing my hair to writing to even using toilet paper, right? You don't think about how we do with the daily things that we do that get us through the day.
And when you're a mom with kids, you don't think that, oh, I need to move back in with my parents. That just, like,
right.
That's not the natural order of things.
Absolutely. You know, and there was a lot of pondering during that time because, you know, I had daily crazy in my, you know, in 911 and being on the police department, how fast my life was each and every day and the emergency situations. And really for the first time getting to realize how deeply exhausted I was, you know, just every day of 911, it was always a trauma every single day. And then you add on top of that of, you know, taking care of, you know, your children and the day to day. And I think, you know, particularly for moms and working moms, you know, they are wearing a lot of different hats and trying to make those things happen. And so, you know, I really was able to look at, you know, how I was living my life. And I knew that self-care was a big aspect that I needed to look at, because in order for me to make a deep impact in the world, I needed to be okay with me and make sure that I was going to have, you know, the health and the things that I needed to continue on with that. Now, that wasn't, you would think with that life-changing event that that would be enough and that I would really shift and change how I was doing things, but that wasn't the case. My final case was actually a kidnapping murder case of a 7-year-old girl who I actually knew the mother. We played softball together, and I actually had seen the little girl, Danielle, just a week prior to her being taken. And, you know, the additional stress and trauma and exhaustion from that case was huge. And it's interesting that we're back here in Tucson, because someone who was an angel that actually donated for the mom and myself and a couple of the ladies associated with the case flew us out here to Tucson to Canyon Ranch to help recover from that tragedy. And it was during that time that I really got to look at going, you know, I have to shift and change how I'm doing things and what that looks like. And so I, after that case, I had, you know, retired from the department and really was looking at, you know, what am I going to be doing and what does that look like? And so that's when I developed my business, the, you know, Spa Life, about seeking that power always, that you have to go within yourself. You have to be able to access the areas of us that we take care of ourselves. It's that oxygen mask on the airplane. If we don't take care of ourselves, we can only have limited impact. And so many people want to make impact in the world, but if they're always giving, sooner or later, they're going to have nothing left to give, and they're not going to be able to support long-term and what that looks like. And so I'm so passionate in my business. I work with entrepreneurial women who are overwhelmed, who are taking care of everyone else and not taking care of themselves, and help them really look at what that is. And part of what I realized, and I was using a lot with my clients, was, you know, you can't stand in your power if you cannot communicate effectively. And so that's really why I started looking at bank code and using bank as a communication tool, not only in the law enforcement, because really perfecting our communication tools really helps people feel heard and seen, and you can actually stand more in who you are and have the confidence that you need to have to stand and be in the world and do what it is that you're here to do.
Well, and I have to say, it's just, what you're doing is making such a huge positive impact. And one of the things that I know with many people that are involved in any type of first responders, you know, I have a friend of mine by the name, her name is also Diane, but she's a retired firefighter. And the things that we think about as we're driving down the street, and she communicated to me as far as that stress level, what she thinks about as she's driving down the street is different. Because we might go by a restaurant and say, oh, they have really, really great food there. She goes by that restaurant and says, yeah, that's where I delivered a baby. One, that was a true story. She ended up on Jay Leno for that. Or it's that restaurant, I rescued somebody who was being a victim of domestic abuse, or that place is where I had somebody that coded and died in my arms. And the stress level that's there. So the communication and the stress, you know, one of the things that we know is that it's huge. And then that brings us to the healthy portion of it. As far as with stress, Carolyn has been a friend of mine for many, many years. And your journey into yoga. So tell the listeners, your story. So,
thank you. I in some ways had a gentler approach to things in my life. When I was about 3 years old, I knew I wanted to be a performing artist. I wanted to move. I wanted to dance, and I wanted to feel the joy of just being a mover and creative artist. So I, as a child, I took a lot of dance classes and tap and ballet and jazz. And eventually I found my way to a conservatory in North Carolina School of the Arts, and trained really a tough training session for 3 years. And then I went to New York. This is very broad strokes here, but I ended up in New York. And I was so fortunate in New York that I went to an audition of 400 other women, and they were looking for an Asian woman, and I don't know.
Blonde hair, blue eyes?
Blonde hair, blue
looks
eyes.
Looks Asian to me.
5'8". Yeah. So I made that audition somehow. Maybe the fact that they were looking for somebody like so different from me made me relax and able to express myself really authentically. But anyway, I got into that company, and then from there just kept getting into more successful or larger companies.
And you've toured all over the world.
Ended up touring all over the world.
And you've been on some of the biggest stages in our
actually,
world.
It's funny, some of the biggest stages are really small because they're very old.
They're really old. Oh, okay. I hadn't thought about that with Europe, yeah.
But you know, art is in the same vein of the other guests today. It's a communication. You know, you are communicating directly with people. And the company that I toured with, probably the longest, is called Momix. And Momix has they're funny. And you know, some modern dance is not funny. It's very serious, and they're making statements, political statements or social statements. There's a certain amount of activism in the arts. And Momix was funny. And so I got to play with audiences, and I could make them laugh. And then I could make them laugh a little more. And so it's this whole thing, the interest I got about communication and about playing with people in that way. But then, so moving on, you can't dance forever. And I had always been interested in how, you know, we were artists, but we were being funded by business. And you know how artists can be somewhat disparaging sometimes of money. And I was just always interested about that. Here I was. I wasn't particularly wealthy. I didn't have the mortgage and the two kids and all of that sort of thing that many people have in their 20s and early 30s. So as I got older and I was thinking about stopping dancing, I thought, I really want to see what it is like to be a business person. Is it different? Is it a different head? Is it a different way of being in
different
the world?
Different head.
Different head, different thinking. You know, what is it? So I have become a business person. I'm a real estate agent. And again, the communication is a big part of my life there. In becoming that real estate agent, I did feel big shifts in my mind and how my mind actually works. It is different, but in the end, it's all very, very same. Similar, I found out, and we are all communicating with each other through our bodies, through our thoughts, you know, through the way we perceive each other non-verbally and such as that. So, coming back around to the health and the yoga for me was a way I always, while I was touring all over the world and changing seasons and changing time zones and all of that. Yoga was just one of the ways that I could center myself. I could center myself in my peace, in my ease of my thinking, and kind of just have a sense of purpose going, you know, going through my day. So As I got into the business world, the yoga became a way of still just grounding myself. It gets so crazy out there. There's so many things going on in our lives. And then there are all the pressures we put on ourselves of what we should look like, how much we should weigh, how much, you know, what are all of the things that we do to ourselves. The yoga has been a piece of, it's just been a gateway or a doorway for me to...
To reduce the stress, and to be
accepting of who I am, much like what you were saying before, is that you have to be who you know who you are, and be solid in that, and still and comfortable with that before you can move forward in your day.
Well, and one of the things that happens because we've seen things. So yes, we've got the law enforcement, which is that high adrenaline, like high crazy adrenaline. Flip side of it, on the real estate and the lending side, people, when they are selling or buying a home, even if it's something that they want to do, it's one of the highest stressors that anybody can have. And the reality is that if they go into the grocery store and they don't have your particular brand of eggs, people don't freak out on you, right? You know, they don't do that to the grocery store. But if something happens on the real estate and the realtors, I mean, it you can have clients doing crazy things. And by the way, listeners, I am in the process of writing a compilation book called Commission Impossible: Tales from the Trenches of Real Estate and Finance, because I'm telling you what, you cannot make this stuff up. It is just it's insane what is having to done. And now within real estate and finance, when I was a realtor from 1983 until 2000. When I started, it was one page to list the property, one page to sell. Now it's the new convenient 11-page form or whatever. I don't even know how you do what you do. But still, we're dealing with people. We're dealing with the communication, and we're dealing with stress. And so our goal within this show is to give people some very specific tools to be healthier, wealthier, and wiser. So this is not going in line. And let's have a conversation. What is it that you have found? We had an interesting conversation, Carolyn, you and I did, about, yes, some people think, oh, yoga. Oh, I don't, you know, yoga's not for me. I think it's too slow. I think it's this, that, and the other. But you have a saying, and I want you to share with the listeners about your yoga could be something other than hatha yoga or whatever. Your yoga could be.
Well, I think yoga in the first place is many things. But most importantly, the 5,000-year-old definition of yoga is a yoga chitta vritti nirodha, which means the calming of the mind.
Oh, God,
it's the calming of the mind. So doing postures and a triangle and cobra and all these things, that is yoga, but it's really the quality of the mind of the person doing the yoga. So if you are gardening, if you're riding a horse, if you're running, whatever your exercise might be, or whatever, just having the awareness and the attention that this is for my mind as well as my body is, for me, that's yoga. It's not just hatha yoga, which is the physical movements that are somewhat made up in the last 200-300 years.
Oh, made up? Oh, really?
So,
okay.
Because the 5,000-year-old, that's it. The calming of the mind, that's it. That's what it is all about.
So what are some other tools besides, I know you do the physical part of it, but some other tools that you do? And I would love to hear how you've reduced your stress, Diane and Carrie. What do you do to... Boy, getting amped up off of a shift when you used to? My gosh.
Right. Well, you know, just to kind of piggyback off on, you know, the mindfulness piece is one of the things I think is really important is to have awareness. Right. I think what happens is that the new addiction is busyness. You know, people are so busy. They're not necessarily productive, but they're just doing a lot of things that maybe are not even moving them forward. So to have the awareness around exactly what they're doing. In fact, one of the quizzes I give my clients is the liferesetquiz.com, because in 2 minutes you see the awareness of what's happening for you in your mind, in your physical space, and your self-care. When you can see that in black and white, what's happening, then you can actually have a starting point to actually do something different around that.
Oh, I need you to repeat that, because first of all, I need to take that test. One of the things that are happening, I'm going to tell you what, those of you know that we've been going through a lot of health issues with my in-laws. Right. And my my father-in-law has a little plaque in his bathroom that said, old age is not for sissies. Oh my gosh, you're not just a kidding. I am navigating untold territories, and it is created because I am a nurturing personality. We'll talk about bank code a little bit more about that. But because taking care of others is my number one criteria, if you will, my number one value, let's put it that way, mm-hmm. that I think I've put the oxygen mask on the entire plane, but really, I don't even know if it's on my face right now for right. me.
And I'd like to say about that, we tend to think of self-care as being selfish. And it couldn't be further from the truth, in my opinion. I mean, they do say, put your mask on first, you know, because if somebody's drowning, I mean, if you're drowning, you can't save anyone. So self-care is something that I think we all in this country just push aside and think that it's not important. Even 3 minutes of self-care, 3 minutes of breathing, for just taking a deep breath, can be so powerful. It doesn't have to be an hour. You know, we're all or nothing in this culture. Mm-hmm. You know, I gotta join a gym and go 5 times a day. And I don't think we have grasped the idea, certainly, of moderation, this busyness. You know, mm-hmm. we have this concept of busy. We got to be busy all the time. And then when we're not busy doing things, we then have all of the media that tells us we need to be thinner, we need to be faster, we need to be stronger. And so it's coming from outside and coming from inside. Mm-hmm. And self-care is a way of moderating all of that push from that some of it's real, some of it's not.
Right. And I think a lot of it becomes a choice, right? And sometimes I think we forget that we actually get to choose how we live our life. And I always like to share with my clients that it's about designing your life versus living by default. And one of the best tools that I think people underutilize is their calendar, because your calendar is your mind in action. Your calendar is a reflection of your life. If you look at your day to day and you look at a week and you look at a snapshot of your calendar, if you look at it, are there a bunch of things that you have to do on there, or are there things that you get to do that you like to do? If you start seeing a lot of have to's on there, that's your life. That's your choosing yourself to live in that way. And so many times people talk about as soon as the kids graduate, as soon as I get a promotion, as soon as I get one more client. Well, you know what? As soon as you're dead, that's all going to go away, right?
There you go.
So, you know, you really have to look at what is that going to be, because you consciously can choose that. And so, you know, a lot of times we feel like we have to do so many things. Do you? You get to choose. And, you know, if you've got something that you just keep procrastinating on or you don't like to do, take it off your calendar. It's your life. You actually get to choose that. If you don't want it on there, get rid of it. And when you were talking about your values, a lot of times people don't have their values on their calendar. You need to find out, what are your top values? If they're not on their calendar, how much of a value is it? How many people say that family is their top value? Is your family on your calendar?
And then don't even appear on there at any time. Right. I know when I'm busy like all of us, and I do. I have to put those things on there, or they just happen next week, right, and next week and next week, and it just doesn't happen. I have them, you know, like I'm sure most people, well, I don't know. I have them color-coded, and I have to, and I looked at my calendar last night and thought, purple is my self-care color. And I looked on there, I was like, dang, there's no purple on there, my map this, I mean, my calendar this week. And I went back and rescheduled it a little bit.
Yeah, that's beautiful, because I also do a color-coded system because I think it's important at a glance to see how you are shifting and balancing. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, we all know there's times where, you know, you got to hit the accelerator and you got to focus on some things. But then you got to look at, well, maybe later on, you know, in the month, or, you know, I always like to say, have a wall calendar around, because there's nothing like a wall calendar to see the whole year, to see, are you putting things on, you know, weekly or monthly or even a quarter, you know, putting a vacation on there, particularly if you have family and they may feel that they're not a priority because you're so driven and focused on your business. If you tell them, hey, I'm spending time with this child or this time with a husband, or we're going to have this thing, they get to see mommy's working so hard because we get to go do this. And then they're actually supporting. And I find a lot of my clients, their kids will actually be like, keep working, mom, because we're going to be going to, you know, Disneyland or even a staycation, where they're just carving the time, because, you know, it's not about getting just the next deal. It's about, you know, how are you creating a life that you actually love? You know, sometimes you build a business and do you actually really love it?
Yeah, no, I see some people that are absolutely miserable. You know, I've like I said, I see everyone in terms of as far as with clients. But to carry a little bit more, when we think about the concept of stress, what do you visualize, or what do you picture, or how do you handle stress? I know we've got some different tools, lots of different tools here.
You mentioned earlier about somebody doesn't go into the grocery store and go off on the clerk because they can't find a dozen eggs that they want. And the reality is, as a law enforcement officer, I saw that happen.
Uh-oh. Well, there you go.
And here's where it comes from, though.
Well, let's put it this way. Normal people know.
People who are not under stress don't. People who are under a great amount of stress lose their mind and do stupid things that they would normally never do. Good people making bad decisions because they've worked themselves up into a level of stress. And when I say work themselves, it's not just because of work. It could be because of family. And what was interesting to me is I looked at, Diane and I both at different times in our careers went to calls where we would think, why in the world did this ever happen? I'm talking to this guy or this lady, or they're perfectly wonderful people, and they did something like incredibly stupid. Because they were under a tremendous amount of stress. And what I was able to trace it back to a lot of times is we're not communicating effectively, which generates that stress. And so when we look at how do we handle stress, well, where does your stress come from? It comes from work. All right. That's one area. A lot of our stress comes from family members and friends.
Oh, yeah. Right. So it can. Yeah.
So where do we trace that back to? And almost always when it's in our relationships, it's because we're not communicating effectively. And that's ultimately when we really narrow that down even further, is we're looking at, they are not hearing what I'm saying, or vice versa. You know, I remember NYPD Blue. There was an episode where two of the detectives were in the locker room, and one of them said something that was racially charged, and the other detective looked at him and said, I can't hear you when you talk like that. And it was such a powerful moment for me. I actually use that clip in some of my trainings, because it's not just cops making a comment, it's people interacting with each other saying, when you use those words, I can't hear you, there's a blockage there of something. And so with bank code, what we were able to use as a tool is to teach people about the four personality types. And bank is an acronym for blueprint, action, nurturing, and knowledge.
So let's break that down.
Yeah. The four personality types, blueprint, action, nurturing, and knowledge, is bank. And when we look at how we communicate, we almost always communicate from our perspective, from our lead personality. And if that person that we're communicating with is from a different, if they're of a different personality, then the words that I'm using may not be in the language that they can hear. So we start to understand by diving into bank and mastering bank and the understanding of different personality types, how do I communicate using the other person's values? You spoke earlier about your nurturing values, your desire to take care of people. Just because we're a mix of all four personalities.
Yeah, everybody has a little bit of all four, but yeah. Something drives you or is your top.
What's your primary mm-hmm. and what's your last? So the things that drive you to do something, the things that trip you up and have you not do something. And when we understand what those personality types are and who we're dealing with, we now, it's no different than if I know that you speak Spanish as your primary language, and I happen to speak Spanish because I've been trained. So now I speak Spanish to you, you can hear me much better. If I speak to you in Korean and you don't know how to speak Korean, well, guess what? You're probably going to get some of the message, but a large part of it's going to be lost. And there's either going to be conflict or we're just not going to be able to communicate effectively. And when that happens, that creates stress. And that's when somebody does go into a grocery store and goes off on the poor stock boy who doesn't happen to know what aisle Jet Puff marshmallows are in.
Oh, boy.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, how many times you've been in a car and somebody started honking at you and flipping you off and you're all, I didn't do anything that I realized. But whatever lane change you tried to do was the trigger for them to completely lose their stuff. I'll share just a real quick story. I was on patrol, I was in uniform, marked patrol car, and I was going to an emergency call. We were trying to catch up to a stolen car. And the stolen car was making all sorts of different moves and changes and different directions. And I was at a point where I was going to exit the freeway. And if I went one way, I was going to be in position. If I went the other way, I wasn't. And I had to do a last minute lane change. And I actually cut a citizen off. And I had my little emergency flashers on in the back. And I looked in my rearview mirror and I did the kind of hand wave
like thank
sorry.
You. Or
yeah. Oops. Sorry. Thank you. And he was holding his middle finger as close to the windshield as he could. And I could read his lips.
Oh, boy.
I won't say what he was saying.
Well, we can guess. Yes. OK.
Yes. Yeah, and they were all four letter words and none of them were joyful or nice
love.
Words.
And
so right after that, they got the car stopped. So I dropped back behind him and I made a traffic stop. I pulled him over. I didn't pull him over. I was going to write him a ticket, but I wanted to explain what was going on. And I walked up and he was just angry. He's one of the most angry people I've ever encountered. And I started talking to him and ultimately he broke down in tears.
Oh,
he had just found out that morning that he was getting a divorce. He was going to lose his house. He was going to probably lose his business. He was stressed to the maximum amount possible, to the point where he's actually screaming, yelling, flipping off a law enforcement officer. And so what I had the opportunity to do at that moment was not make a grown man cry. That wasn't my goal. But to have, because I knew that if I just let him continue on down the road,
he's going to be a road rage issue. Yeah.
Because if he was going to react to me that way, somebody who had the power to arrest him and put him in jail, how is he going to react to some citizen who doesn't have that power? So we had that conversation and he had an opportunity to reset because it all came down to communication.
Well, and that's that whole paradigm shift. I know one of the books that I have been reading recently that was recommended by a friend and mentor of mine, founder of eWomen Network, Sandra Yancey, has recommended The Platinum Rule and talks about, and that's what bank code really is also. We'll talk a little bit more about the different personalities are, but and actually just knowing all this, Carolyn has a gift for this of treating people the way they want to be treated, not the way she thinks they need to be treated, and not making judgments about you should buy this house. I mean, there's also a lot of too many people should on each other and it's not good.
Right.
You know, parents are notorious for doing it to their children. So let's have a conversation. And by the way, one more time, I think I just need to remind you that I am Karen Fisher. I'm a senior loan officer with Summit Funding. I do residential home loans in the state of Arizona. And we are broadcasting live from the Stewart Title Studio, which is on Broadway in Tucson, right at their main headquarters. And this is Tucson Business X Radio. So it's a podcast. It's business to business. Feel free to share this link and we're honored by, I get lots of great feedback and honored by our listeners. So let's have a taking it a little step further. Let's talk about what are some of the things that you do to relieve your stress now? Communication is a big piece of it, and getting on the, being in the same wavelength. But some of the, specifically, what are you doing now?
I'd like to say in general first is that, and you can tell, what do you think of this? Stress is something, you know, you can say it happens to us. And we have, because of our millions of years of evolution, we have a response to that stress. And it's a complicated sort of chemical response, but let's just call it adrenaline for ease of conversation. So when something begins to stress us for whatever reason, the adrenaline starts to pump through our bodies. When our adrenaline pumps through our bodies, one of the things it does is it shallows up our breathing. So, you know, even be panting. Somebody that's really, you know, really upset is panting. So that will continue to happen. So, no, there's no saber-toothed tigers chasing us. But what about when you miss the stoplight? You know, there's a little shot of adrenaline. You know, you're late or something doesn't, you know, we have these little shots of adrenaline all the time happening. So we have these low levels of stress in our bodies. Our breath continues to get shallow or to stay shallow. And so for me, and a lot of times in yoga, we talk about the breath a lot because the breath is one of the only systems in our body that we actually have control over.
Oh, I never thought about that. Yeah, you can't just
stop your stomach from stomaching.
Digesting, you know? Yes, from stomaching. You know? I love that.
Yeah. I mean, yogis can, and there are ways to do it. But just generally, in general, we don't change the other systems. But they've done studies about this, and you know, when you have emotions have a particular breath signature.
We have a breath signature.
Emotions have a particular breath signature. So when you're happy, you tend to breathe a certain way. When you're angry, you breathe a certain way. So if you can, when you are getting upset, just breathe. You don't have to do anything more than that to accomplish a great deal. Bring your breath down into your, they say belly in yoga. It's not really your belly, but it's in the lower part of your torso, so that you're drawing the breath fully into your lungs, deep into your back, up into your shoulders, the whole thing. And you know how often we do that? We go, I mean, we do it naturally. So we can, in yoga or in stress management, we don't have to do more. You know, we again in this culture like to do.
I'm busy.
We are called human beings, though. We're not called human doings. We are called human beings. So if you just be within yourself, breathe, and that's one way I deal with my stress is just simply breathing.
Reminding yourself to breathe.
Right. And I absolutely agree with that. And I think it's one of those things that we forget. They're very simple things that you can do it in a moment. It doesn't have to be hours to do that. And so it's so important to be intentional about those type of things. And I think that particularly when it comes to stress is that it actually comes down to interpretation, because when you think about, you know, we can be very reactionary to things, but if we decide to be proactive in anything that comes into our field, it's how we interpret it is how we actually respond to it. Because when you think about it, if you are saying that, you know, I'm short of breath or I'm, you know, clammy or I'm breathing fast or something, someone could say, I'm stressed. Another person could say, I'm excited. So the interpretation, the same things are happening within the body, but it's our interpretation of it is how we're going to react from that. The other aspect, too, is that we want to be able to utilize our emotions to actually fuel us and to actually serve us, because our emotions actually move us into the next direction of the expression we're going to have. If we're feeling, you know, sad or angry or things are happening, we actually have the control to just say, what's the next best feeling to get to? You may not go straight up to bliss, right? But you may go to, you know what? I feel content, you know, or you know, that makes me smile, or maybe I'm going to have laughter because laughter can shift something. But our physiology has a really big part of how it is that we're feeling. We can, you know, you can have the example, you know, if listeners are driving, don't do this. But if you are in a place
yeah,
where
that's good, yeah.
you can actually stand, right, put your shoulders back, you know, mm-hmm. take a deep breath, and then look up, right, and then smile. It's hard to be pissed off if you are smiling and your shoulders are back. So you look at how are you positioning yourself to win versus you think about the opposite where you've got the slumped shoulders, you're looking down, you're inward. It's like it actually reflects how you're feeling in the world. So we have immediate control of what we can do to shift and change those things. And again, going back to the emotions, if you think about it, you aren't in a state of extreme emotion for more than 60 seconds.
Oh, is that? Oh.
Yes. So what happens is that if you're feeling angry, let yourself feel the anger because it's not going to last. It's going to push through because we have these automatic systems that you're not going to be in these traumatic states. You have to shift that. And so just ride the wave of it. And then get to the next best feeling space and know that you can control that.
Well, and I like that next best feeling. And one of the things that I've been doing just in terms of a practice on a personal basis, it's been really easy for me to go. And then being in the position of being a caregiver on some other areas and things like that. And when you're talking about the slumped shoulders and things like that, I have to say that that's one of the things that's most disturbing about some of both from a nursing home standpoint or some of the places that we've had to visit. And I think to myself, we've got some of the most brilliant minds and people that are there. A part of our society is throwing them away. You know, there's some decisions being made that they're, you know, like we don't celebrate old age in our society as a rule of thumb. Let's face it. You know, there's more ads about how you're going to keep your skin looking young, you know, this, that, and the other. People doing all different kinds of things to erase the wrinkles. I'm thinking to myself, my God, I earned every one of these, you know. Hopefully they're mostly smiles, but a lot of times it's tears. And then the other thing is, and this is from a communication standpoint, communicating how you do things. So I happen to have the same physiological reaction to several different emotions. Happy, joyful, mad, sad, all manifest in the same way. I cry, and I've had to communicate with family members. No. This is me mad, you know, not sad. This is, you know, and I know I've talked to some other friends that they do the same thing, the same exact reaction. So let's talk a little bit about bank code as far as the thing, because we want to be able, and I want to make sure everybody, so real quick, because we want to talk about bank code, but Carolyn, I want you to tell people how listeners can get in contact with you, both from the real estate, because you're an amazing residential real estate agent right here in Tucson, beautiful Tucson, Arizona. How can they reach you? And repeat it twice because people have to jot things down.
Okay. Well, thank you. I have a website. It is my name, my first name, initial C Minor AZ, Arizona. C Minor AZ. That's CMINORAZ.com. And I have a number of links there that go both to yoga and to real estate and to some of the other arts things I'm interested in. And I also have a Facebook page, Carolyn Minor, Realtor. And my number?
Phone number.
My phone
Please
number
give
is
me your phone.
520-406-0206.
Repeat your phone number, because some people like to text also.
520-406-0206.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And then, Diane, please make sure, I want them to know how to get in contact with you, you and Carrie both. And then I want to talk a little bit about some of the, people want to know more about this bank code and what they mean. So if you can let us know.
Yeah. So you can connect with me socially on Facebook at Diane Halfman Fan. That's DianeHalfmanFan. So that's a good way. You can also, texting is the best way as well, at 619-921 3272. Those are two of the best ways to get a hold of me.
And repeat the phone number. That's one of the things, or the text number, because it is a phone, but the text.
Yes. So the text at 619-921-3272. And then in order to really find out what your code is, I know we've been chatting a little bit here about bank code, and to increase your communication skills, you're going to want to, in 90 seconds, find out what your personality type is, and then everyone around you, so you can communicate more effectively with them. And you can do that at mybankcode.com/victory. So my bank code is MY and then bankcode.com/victory, VICTORY.
So with the, and Carrie, you have the business together. Is there a separate phone number that you wanted to give, or is it one and the same, or just repeat it?
So my personal cell phone number, which they're welcome to call or text with any questions about bank, is 619-980-0429. That's 619-980-0429. And again, that mybankcode.com/victory there, as Diane said, in 90 seconds or less, you're going to be able to find out what your personality is. You're going to get an email with a really cool PDF that's going to have information about your personality. And as a free gift to your listeners, they can do that. It doesn't cost them anything. They can also use it for their family, which we highly recommend, because we want families to, in your relationships at work. I've had supervisors have all of their team members crack their codes, and it's a great way to increase communication.
It is an amazing, amazing tool, and we're having a lot of fun with it. Again, I want to just reiterate and how you can reach me, because my superhero job is I give other people's money away and I get paid to do it, all within the state of Arizona. The company, Summit Funding, is actually located in many, many states, but to reach me, Karen Fisher, my direct line is 520-447-2279. Again, that's 520-447-2279. That is not a text line. That is a phone number, landline. And I just want to say a special thank you to Stewart Title. They are an amazing community sponsor, from the Rafferty House with Habitat for Humanity, supporting and helping people to grow and supporting first responders especially. And once again, we are broadcasting live. This will be podcasted, so you can forward it on. We are live from the Stewart Title Studio on Broadway in Tucson, Arizona. And if you have ideas or questions for other guests or things like that, please feel free to call me. This is a regular radio show. I've had the honor of doing radio for a little bit better than 18 plus years. And I love this format where it's not interrupted 86 million times by commercials. So thank you. Any parting words? Just stay stressed.
Thank you for having us on.
Oh, you're most welcome.
Yes, thank you.
One quote I always like to leave people with is by Clement Watt, and it's, take the first step, no more, no less, and the next step will be revealed. Don't worry about the million things on your list. Just take the first one.
Oh, I love that. That's a great parting word. Thank you very much.